The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
We love it.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, July 8th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome back, everyone. We had a little bit of a vacation, our 1 week during the summer where we get to take a little bit of a break, and boy, did I have a good time. I got to shoot a 9mm pistol, or actually handgun, I should say. 9mm handgun out in the middle of Central Oregon. Got to tell my Texas friends about that. Also had a good time all over the north coast of Oregon and the southwestern coast of Washington. Big thanks to Cannabis Carry for being the ultimate tour guide to the north coast. If you ever want to visit and see all the sights, she's the one to get a hold of. And very, very glad, recharged, refreshed, lots of stuff to get to on today's show because the news doesn't stop just because I take a vacation, especially right here in the state of Oregon. My God, the biggest stories to hit the state of Oregon in marijuana law reform happen while I'm on break. Not only did we get PTSD added to our medical marijuana law a while back, but we also just got a couple of bills signed that reduce a lot of the penalties for recreational use, and we got a bill signed that's about to be signed. It's passed the legislature to finally create dispensaries here in the state of Oregon. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And with those dispensaries, with that business, more political clout, more political power, and just the kind of fundraising base we need to get legalization passed in 2014. On today's show, it's Monday, so we're going to visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis Q&A segment. We'll all sorts of things to talk to Dr. Mitch about, including a study on the use of cannabis to help people stop smoking cigarettes. That's a beautiful thing. We'll talk to him all about that, and we'll take your calls and questions right here in our chat room on Ustream if you'd like to get involved with the conversation. Our phone line is 971-533-7111, and it's back up and operational. You can call in during the second half hour of the show and talk live with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We're also going to take a look at the Radical Rant today, a little bit about the Mexican cartels and how they are making their presence known right here in the state of Oregon, and why that means we need to get to legalization as soon as possible. But before we get to all of that, we've got our 420 radio news. We'll talk about those Oregon laws that have passed. Colorado's released their recreational marijuana rules. Oklahoma's welfare drug screening is failing. And more BHO explosions all across the country. It's the Russ Belleville Show. We'll be right back. Stick around.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business, you know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow.
law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 8th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Oregon governor signs marijuana policy reforms into law from theweedblog.com. Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber signed into law two bills that make sensible changes to Oregon's marijuana laws. These new laws, which took effect immediately, reduce the severity of the punishment for certain marijuana crimes. SB 40 reduces penalties for possession of more than an ounce of marijuana. SB 40 reduces the criminal penalty for possession of more than 4 ounces of marijuana from a Class B felony, which carries up to 10 years in prison, to a Class C felony, which has a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison. It also reclassifies possession of 1 to 4 ounces of marijuana from a Class B felony to a Class B misdemeanor, reducing the maximum sentence from 10 years to 6 months. It also reduces the penalty for unlawful manufacture of marijuana from a Class A felony to a Class B felony, reducing the maximum prison term for marijuana growing from 20 years to 10 years. SB 82 eliminates a section of the law that forced courts to suspend the driving privileges of people found in possession of under an ounce of marijuana. Medical marijuana bill passes Oregon House, now goes to the governor, from OregonLive.com. The Oregon House on Saturday passed a bill legalizing medical marijuana retail establishments, moving what has been a booming but legally hazy industry squarely into the mainstream and handing medical marijuana advocates a major victory. House Bill 3460, now headed to Governor John Kitzhaber's desk, creates a registry of businesses that sell the medical marijuana. Patients have long sought retail access to cannabis, arguing that the state's rules, grow your own marijuana or have someone do it for you, are unrealistic. The vote means Oregon joins a dozen other states that allow medical marijuana dispensaries or retail outlets. Oregon voters have twice defeated ballot initiatives creating a regulated dispensary system, but that hasn't deterred the state's medical marijuana industry. Multnomah County law enforcement has largely looked the other way when it comes to these establishments, but police in other counties, such as Jackson, Washington, and Malheur, have cracked down on the sale of medical marijuana out of retail storefronts. Colorado's recreational marijuana sales rules revealed, from Inquisitor.com. The Colorado Department of Revenue has released a 60-plus page report that highlights marijuana sales rules for the state. The rules apply to how recreational marijuana should be licensed, regulated, and ultimately sold throughout Colorado. Under terms of the agreement, marijuana labeling must conform to specific language requirements of the state with a focus on potency, amount of THC in the marijuana product, and a clear set of directions that explain how to properly use the product. Labeling also must include a full list of non-organic pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides used during cultivation. The labels will be used on marijuana cigarettes and any other products that are created from the plant. Every recreational marijuana product in the state of Colorado also must feature the following warnings. There may be health risks associated with the consumption of this product. This product is intended for use by adults 21 years and older. Keep out of reach of children. This product is unlawful outside the state of Colorado. This product is infused with retail marijuana. This product was produced without regulatory oversight for health, safety, or efficacy. And the intoxicating effects of this product may be delayed by 2 or more hours. Oklahoma Welfare Drug Screening finds few violations, wastes tax dollars, from theweedblog.com. Last year, the Oklahoma legislature passed and Governor Mary Fallon signed into law a bill mandating drug screening for welfare applicants. The bill was designed to save the state money by weeding out drug users seeking temporary assistance for needy families or TANF funds. But the new law is finding few welfare drug users. According to the State Department of Human Services, in the first 4 months that the law was in effect, some 1,300 people underwent screening to see if there was a reasonable suspicion that they were using drugs, but only 29 were denied benefits. That is about 2.2% of those screened, a drug use level well below the national average of about 8%. And of those 29 people denied benefits, only 16 actually failed a drug test. 13 others simply refused to comply with demands for additional testing. The testing and screening procedures have cost the state $74,000. Two men suffer burns and explosion while making marijuana oil, police say, from NBC's Southern California. Two men were hospitalized Friday in Tustin and suffered severe burns inside what appeared to be a drug lab. The men were attempting to extract marijuana oil using butane inside a garage. This is also followed up by an explosion in Ypsilanti, Michigan, where there was a similar BHO-making explosion. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 8th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the state of Oregon and the recent passage of all of these pro-marijuana bills and how that provides the roadmap out of the medical marijuana box canyon. This is the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Pipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder. So much for that amotivational syndrome.
Welcome back, everybody. 13 and a half past the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines, and we're going to analyze this great news that we got out of the state of Oregon. As you heard from our headlines, we passed a lot of great bills that depenalize, that reduce some of the penalties that are in our state law for marijuana possession and cultivation. And we've also gotten a lot of changes to our medical marijuana law. So I wanted to run through these in something that was basically inspired by one of the listeners out there who got me on Twitter. You know, I've been a proponent for a long time of this theory called the medical marijuana box canyon. And he asked, how does the passage of these recent bills in Oregon, being a medical marijuana state, how does this inform my opinion on the box canyon theory? And after I thought about it for a while, I think that the passage of these bills validates everything I've been saying about the box canyon. Now, to catch people up who might not know what I'm talking about, the box canyon is the idea that the arc for the fight for medical marijuana is inevitably going to bend toward cannabinoid pharmaceuticals and away from the legal use of the whole plant. I mean, so long as we keep fighting only for medical marijuana and we try to distance ourselves from legalization for recreational use, Then we're subject to the frames of medical and medicine, and they're going to want to make the marijuana fit those frames of pharmaceuticalization and prescriptions and doctors and pharmacies and sprays and pills and inhalers, and away as far from possible from the crude smoked plant that the mainstream denigrates as recreational use. Part of the evidence of this is the last seven states that have passed medical marijuana laws. And the next two, New York and Illinois, that are debating them, have created dispensary-only medical marijuana laws. Now, there are a couple of exceptions in Arizona and Massachusetts. Arizona, if you're more than 25 miles from a dispensary, you can grow your own. Massachusetts, if you have a hardship exemption, you can grow your own. But generally, the medical marijuana patients are not allowed to grow their own medicine. Instead, tightly licensed growers supply marijuana under strict regulations to highly secured dispensaries that sell it at prices greater than necessary, on purpose, in order to ensure the dispensaries don't undercut the black market. Well, soon enough, the FDA and Big Pharma, and they're going to develop these great cannabinoid medications. They got some third stage trials on Sativex right now. And they'll develop them without the undesirable side effect that we call high. And then the state's going to replace all the plant marijuana with the FDA-approved, insurance-covered big pharma cannaceuticals. Now, the truly needy patients are going to welcome these medicines because they'll be more affordable since insurance will pay for them, and they'll be available at all times. You won't have to worry about, you know, pests or mites or droughts or weird growers or anything. And the people that clamor for the plant, well, they're going to be put back with us recreational consumers as just stoners who want to get high. So that's the box canyon in a nutshell. So how does the Oregon situation validate this box canyon? Because we just got post-traumatic stress added to the medical bill. We got a system of dispensaries for the medical use. We got rid of the driver's license suspension for a pot ticket under an ounce. We reduced the penalty from a quarter pound down to a 6-month misdemeanor. A quarter ounce of hash is now a 6-month misdemeanor. Possession over a quarter pound got dropped from a class B to a class C felony, putting the prison sentence in half from 10 to 5 years. Cultivation went from an A to a B, 20 years to 10 years. So didn't everything just get better with medical, you know, both medical and recreational got better bills this year in Oregon. So doesn't that argue against the Box Canyon? Well, yes, in a sense, unless you realize that these accomplishments happened in large part thanks to the activism for recreational legalization in 2012. In fact, we tried to pass dispensary measures that are very similar to what's passing here in 3460. We tried passing those a couple of times by initiatives and lost both times. And after both losses, there was pretty much a stall in the Oregon legislature for passing anything. Nothing was moving. But we get a near success in passing a wide open legalization in 2012, and the state just north of us passes a stricter legalization by a wide margin, then our legislature said, oh, maybe we ought to start taking up some of these pro-marijuana measures. Now, I'm not trying to dismiss the work medical marijuana activists have done in Oregon either. I mean, our biggest victory was SB 1085, getting the plant limit up from 7 to 24 all the way back in 2005. That did a lot to defeat the Box Canyon here because people had access to so many plants. And believe it or not, some of our Oregon activists actually fought against that bill. But never mind. The community also showed its strength when we defeated Dwight Holton for attorney general and brought in Ellen Rosenblum, very pro-medical marijuana, who actually toured some of our dispensaries. And her endorsement of this dispensary bill went a long way to getting this passed through the legislature. So no doubt that the medical marijuana community has done amazing work in getting these passed. But keep in mind, our medical marijuana activists in Oregon, for the most part, don't make any secret of their activism for full legalization. A lot of the same people and same dollars that worked on the dispensary measures worked on the legalization measures. Oregon doesn't have that sort of medical versus recreational, ASA versus normal thing going on here. It seems everybody's for the legalization of marijuana. It's this threat to legalization that pushes our legislature, just like Prop 19 pushed Governor Schwarzenegger and the California legislature to decriminalize, to try to take away some of the effect of the push for legalization. And on a down note, kind of, passage of all these depenalization bills in Oregon is going to make our fight a little bit harder for legalization in 2014, because some of the problems will be alleviated. Some of the costs will go down. But that doesn't mean we don't stop fighting for legalization in 2014 by any means. I'm all for good things happening.
Yep, never gonna stop fighting until we don't have a reason to fight anymore.
And in hour two, we'll talk more about Box Canyon and take questions on it if you want. It's really more of an East Coast, West Coast thing, like the rap battles of the 90s.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Fun. Big Daddy Thinks.
Funky Rollerin.
Funky to the bone.
Ooh, yeah.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey, before we get today's tune, I just want to say welcome back, everyone, and it was good to have a week off. I really, really needed it. Some amazingly good and amazingly bad things happened during the week, but I won't get into that. But one thing I did do over this weekend, I got a lot of suggestions from people about the website. People in the mainstream who don't, you know, aren't a part of the pop movement. And one of the things they said is I needed to put a donate button right on the front page. So it's up there now. If you look on 420radio.org, top left corner, big old donate button. Also, I made the player bigger on the main page and put some graphics up for our sponsors because, you know, there's certain softwares that block ads, and it was messed, you know, you couldn't see who our sponsors were, and they deserve some recognition. But the thing that I'm getting most from the chat room right now is, where's the pop out? Where's the pop out? I used to have this link on the front page that you get the show and the chat room to pop out on. Don't worry, it's still there. Just go to the top right corner. There's a big blue button that says connect to 420 radio, and that slides down a panel. Everything you need's in there. The pop out, the connection to Ustream, the downloadable apps, all of our Facebook and Twitter connections, and coming soon, I haven't even brought this up with Brian yet, but as soon as we can get another box put together that can stream to Shoutcast or something, we can get on TuneIn Radio, iHeart Radio, and Stitcher Radio, those live radio apps that are on everyone's machines.
I may have an extra box laying around my house I built from parts of your old computer.
Ha ha ha! We shall see how this works. But once we get that, live streaming radio right on the apps that you already use to get your other favorite radio stations. So, exciting things happening here for 420 Radio. Another exciting thing happening is we may have a marketing person volunteering for us, a great activist out of Georgia named Ebony. That's right, named Ebony Knight, who I met out there at the Southern Cannabis Reform Conference. She's like a marketing expert. That's what she does in the real world. So she's going to help me out, perhaps. So we'll tell you how that turns out. And finally, the only other thing.
Hey, now, friends, Grateful Dread here in Summit, New Jersey, the home of member-supported Grateful Dread Public Radio.
I forgot
Radio.
This had one of those intros on there. All right, well, we'll get that fixed. Anyway, the other news, there was some, I had made a proposal to NARMAL to produce a podcast for them. It got rejected in their board meeting. However, looks like we'll be negotiating some other projects instead. So I'll keep you posted on that. When I know more, we'll let you know. All right, so let's get to our 420 Radio Daily Toker Tune for the day. This is a tune that I got long ago. You can tell from that intro that's still attached to it. And it's one of these Mexican narco corridas, which is a type of music that is about the Mexican drug war, about the narco trafficking that's going on down there and how these cartels settle their business with bribes and bloodshed. And it kind of fit with what I was doing for the Radical Rant today. We'll be talking about the Mexican cartels that are setting up shop here in the state of Oregon. The Oregonian, our state's largest paper, has done this extensive investigation about 9 months into the reach of the cartels here in Oregon. We'll be talking about that in the Radical Rant. And so I thought this music would be appropriate for that. Also, I'm trying to teach myself Spanish. Literally, I got some Spanish software. See if we can learn some Spanish. But this
bueno.
Yeah, thank you. This is El Polvo y la Marihuana by Los Rieleros del Norte.
Esta es la historia, señores, de un caso muy verdadero. De dos hombres que murieron, Miguel del Güero, Marcelo. Aquella noche salieron de la Sierra Tarahumara. Venían rumbo a la frontera, se dirigían a Ojinaga. Estaban los federales, le salieron al camino dos agentes judiciales. No nos rendimos, señores, ni nos asusta el gobierno. Formó un tiroteo que parecía el mismo infierno. Murieron los judiciales, también Miguel y Marcelo. El polvo y la marihuana quedó regada en el suelo.
Hey, Ellen, want a hit? Want to smoke a joint before trying this on?
There you go, Ellen. You want to get high? We got some great high stick in the back.
Smoke. Kind buds. Sexy.
You're gonna love this stuff. It'll get you really high.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past on a Monday. That means it's time for our dose of science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
You know, I got to tell you, you reached out and touched me over the weekend. I took a friend to go to Powell's House of Books and touring around Powell's is just this block-sized bookstore that's three stories tall, and rounded a corner, and right there on the end cap was Pop Politics. So I took a picture of myself with it just to prove it.
Oh, great. Actually, I haven't been to Powell's in a couple of years, but last time I went ahead and signed the Pod Politics that was in there, so I hope that copy's no longer there.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to take a look and find out. Speaking of Powell's, by the way, folks, tomorrow, Doug Fine, the author of Too High to Fail, is going to be at Powell's Bookstore. I'm going to go out there and get some film and interview with him, so maybe I'll see you out there. All right.
I actually wrote a review of that for American Psychological Association. It's a wonderful book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's great. All right. I encourage anyone to check that book out, Too High to Fail. There's a link out on the weedblog.com. If you check out there in their top right corner, you can get a copy. All right. With Dr. Mitch, we always take your questions in the chat room. If you put the Q colon by it, it makes it easier for us to find it. Also, we got our phone lines open at 971-533-7111. But we always let Dr. Mitch have the first word and let us know what's the latest in cannabis science.
Yes, a new article in the journal Bibliotheca talks about the uses of hemp in Pakistan. Pakistan is in a situation where they really need as much biodiverse fuel as possible. And these authors essentially walk through how hemp could really help their resources there. And it need not be psychoactive. As we've mentioned before, there are strains of hemp that are less than 1.5% THC. You'd have to smoke a whole field in order to get high. But it's a wonderful plant that's extremely efficient, easy on the environment, and could actually be a great source of biodiesel there in the Middle East and, of course, here in the United States as well.
Absolutely. Just switching over our diesel trucks, you know, the long-haul truckers over to hemp biodiesel alone would do so much for our environment. I'm glad that you brought up the hemp, because that leads me to an article that we had covered, a story we'd covered a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't get a chance to ask you about it, but I thought this was amazing and what it could do for American medicine. And this was a story on a study. It was the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology, and it was a study showing that hemp fabric kills bacteria, including MRSA. And wow, what a difference that would make in our hospitals.
It's funny, because this actually goes back at least to the 1950s, and there's some conjecture about why certain ancient peoples were actually buried in hemp. So, yeah, we do see this wild antibacterial effect even in the hemp fiber, and so that would be really adaptive. Obviously, it's not as strong as hardcore antibacterials, but then, of course, it's not as difficult to deal with in the long run. And with both MRSA and C. diff going rampant in hospitals right now, I feel like this would be a nice, inexpensive way to intervene.
Yeah, and this was a 60% hemp, 40% rayon, so it wasn't even full hemp. And they found they just put it on scrubs and lab coats and the drapes between the patients. And there's some 2 million Americans that get MRSA in the hospital every year, and 90,000 people that die from it. Far more than ever died from cannabis, of course. So, yeah, this is an amazing find. I hope we can do something with this. All right. Let me get to a question from the chat room. I had a couple of others that I want to get to as well, but I want to make sure our chatters are getting their questions in. And this one comes from, here we go, Runaround666, who wants to know, what do you think about that study that just got some ink lately saying long-term cannabis use makes us lazy?
The curious thing about this is, of course, it's even in the longitudinal data, not randomly assigned. So as I used to joke on the stages at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, it's not that cannabis makes people lazy. It's that once you decide you're going to be lazy, cannabis sounds like fun.
There we go. Not all cannabis smokers are lazy, but some lazy people smoke cannabis.
Exactly.
Trickster Phillips wanted to know if we could talk about the Queensland Brain Institute study on cannabis and schizophrenia, and I don't know if I caught this one.
I mean, the clincher is this is just one in a whole series, and what has happened, unfortunately, is this schizophrenia cannabis link has become reified, and so they put people in the horrible MRI machine and give them THC by itself, no cannabidiol, and what a surprise, they have various paranoid or psychotic experiences. Well, we know for a fact that THC by itself would do that to anyone, and thank God the plant doesn't have to have THC and THC alone, so that would certainly be helpful if we could actually use whole plant in these studies. But in fact, a lot of the data on THC and schizophrenia, or at least cannabis use in schizophrenia, doesn't seem to replicate, and unfortunately that never gets the media attention that we want. So Timmy Moffitt, who I love, who found basically a double genetic risk set of folks who were heavily involved with cannabis early in life, were more likely to develop schizotypia, sort of schizophrenia-like. But once another group tried to find the same thing, they couldn't find it. What a surprise that failure to replicate got no media coverage, whereas Timmy Moffitt's thing got a ton.
Mm-hmm. All right. Another story that caught my eye, this was in the Weed blog as well. Cannabis compound reduces cigarette consumption in tobacco smokers. So is it possible that smoking weed can lead you away from smoking cigarettes?
I have literally been receiving emails about this since 2002. And I always thought, oh, it's just smoke is smoke, or maybe there's something about the sensation of smoke going down your lungs that helps ease the pain or something like that. But this is much more focused on cannabinoid receptors themselves and the tendency to essentially soothe discomfort, alleviate distress more generally, and the distress associated with nicotine withdrawal does seem to be alleviated under these circumstances. I'm apprehensive about this and at least want to encourage folks to lean on their vaporizer rather than alternative ways of smoking if they're going to use this approach. But by all means, anything that can get you off those nasty cigarettes is bound to be good.
All right. We have such great questions from our chat room. Randy Brush in our chat room has this one. Does cannabis have any effect on lead in removal from the body, air, or soil? Does cannabis help remove lead?
So this is a controversial issue and one that I've been asked before. And at least when you look at some of the agricultural literature, it does look like cannabis is drawing lead out of the soil. But, of course, then we don't really want that in cannabis that we're going to smoke. So you can imagine if you've got some lead-laced soil, growing a bunch of hemp plants in there and hoping it takes them out of there, but then certainly not using them pharmacologically, maybe using them for hemp or something like that, because we don't want that lead ending up in our own lungs.
Okay. A follow-up question he has is to ask your opinion, and I've never heard of using this, so you might have to explain it to me, your opinion on using calcium bentonite clay for bong water to remove metals.
So the clincher was this bentonite was actually one of those things that people were sort of using when they were fasting and looking at how it went through your system and stuff like that. There actually isn't a lot of compelling evidence that it absorbs anything novel, that it does anything different from, say, standard psyllium fiber or other sources of fiber. So until we have better data, I can't say one way or another. There is at least one published case study, too, where somebody kind of overdid it on this and ended up with some serious GI problems. So this is not a toy. We don't need to eat clay if we don't have to.
There's some follow-up in the chat on this about the use of screens. People smoking through a bong perhaps would use a metal screen to keep the material from falling through. And I've heard of people using different types of screens, glass screens, and different types of metals. What can you tell us about the use of screens and how they might affect us?
It's sad that there aren't more data on this, but the problem really is, everybody's heard my vaporizer soapbox, and that would be, of course, my first choice. But anytime you heat metal, certain ions are formed, and that's going to definitely come off. Now, some of those are not going to be filtered through water, but then we have a less efficient administration of the cannabinoids in the first place, so it gets really complicated. If you can afford a vaporizer, I really recommend it. Otherwise, in truth, we just don't have any data on one screen versus another.
Yeah, and just to add here, it says that he's burning through screens pretty quickly. That's could be that you're using a torch lighter, which is, you know, not very good for smoking cannabis with anyway, because you boil off certain cannabinoids before they're effective. But
you really don't need that much heat to make good use of the plant.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's see here. We are live, by the way, here on 420radio.org, but if you don't get a chance to get your question answered or you're just shy and want to ask it privately, you can go to our contact form, 420radio.org/contact, or click the links from the front page. There's a drop down for Ask Dr. Mitch. We can send the questions that way, or you can do it directly through email to 420research@gmail.com. There was another story, and this one comes from Fox News, so I took it with a salt lick, but it said, chronic cannabis use may cause brain inflammation. Any note on brain inflammation?
As it turns out, this is a misinterpretation of some data that were gathered years ago suggesting that heavy cannabis use early in life changes the ratio of white to gray matter. And it was true only in one really small sample. It has not replicated. I you know, certainly am not a fan of heavy use of cannabis early in life. So by all means, we already knew that that wasn't a great idea. But the idea that this actually inflames neurons makes no sense given what we know about antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects of the cannabinoids.
We have another question from Randy Brush, which I don't know if there's any use in the answer, but it kind of interesting trivia. What's bigger in a human, the cannabinoid receptor or a brain cell?
What's funny is the receptor itself is just a small set of literally molecules on the end of a brain cell, on the end of the neuron itself, and they're only present in some nerves and not in others. Fortunately, it's the ones that are associated with euphoria, with appetite, and with memory. And obviously the ones in the periphery, in the immune system, are outside the spinal cord, outside the brain itself. So it's an intriguing thing to think that the plant and our bodies have evolved this way.
All right. Time for one last question from Reefer Rob. Wants to know, how effective is cannabis in the process of neurogenesis?
We don't have a ton of evidence about, say, smoked cannabis itself, but we're getting really encouraging things from some labs in Ohio with both THC and cannabidiol helping along the neurogenesis process. It's not a panacea yet. It's not the cure for Alzheimer's for folks who already have it, but it certainly has some amazing neuroprotective effects that are antioxidants, similar to a lot of other plants. I can't say it's the lone and only one, but definitely an impressive set of data.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today for our Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We do this every Monday, so if you missed out of the beginning, just come on back next Monday. We'll do it again, or listen to the replay that comes up in just 3 hours from now. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week.
Have a great show.
And John Thomas, we'll get your question next week on that. That's an interesting one on the vapor pens. Coming up next, we got time for a radical rant. Going to talk about the influence of Mexican cartels right here in Oregon.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Respect the law, but know your rights, and share if you can.
Ask me any question, I'm gonna plead the fifth, unless you asking me if I wanna smoke a spliff.
coming over. I'm gonna take a leave. You know I leave you feeling like you got a touch of the gift.
Yeah. This is Brian the Red, and you're listening to 420radio.org. So get a little airy.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
All right, this kind of a follow-up on talking about the Oregon legislature passing some of our depenalization bills. And I was happening through the Oregonian and found their seven-part story that they put together, a nine-month investigation on the influence of the Mexican drug trafficking cartels, Los Zetas and Sinaloa, that are currently ensconced in this state, that are running pot plantations out in the federal and the state wilderness areas. And this is pretty harrowing stuff. And I'm so grateful to the Oregonian for doing this, for, you know, bringing some reality to the people here, both on our side and the other side. Okay, let me start with our side. First of all, there's a tendency, there's somewhat of a tendency sometimes to distrust the media when they report on marijuana issues. And it's not unfounded. For years and years and years, we always got the up in smoke, been snuffed out, hazy dream headlines, you know, pot puns from the media who would treat this issue with barely any respect whatsoever. That's changing. That is changing as we are legalizing, as we're getting better mainstream representation. And I believe that these pieces that the Oregonian put together on this are important, because there's people on our side who distrust the media that are going to see a story like this. Oh, you're sensationalizing. You're trying to make it seem worse than it is, or trying to do this to undermine the political process as far as legalization goes. And I don't think that's the case whatsoever. I think there are people on our side, on the legalization side, who are very quick to come up with defenses for, you know, what might be happening, who fail to recognize some of the serious criminal aspects that are in play here. For example, you know, people, if it's ever brought up about Mexican cartels and grows getting into the medical arena or vice versa, people are quick to jump away and say, that's not happening, that's not happening. But folks, you can't run a gray market alongside a black market and have there not be some sort of interaction at some point, at some level. Now that we got the dispensary bill passed, we might be able to distance that a little bit. But right now, it'd be a tough argument to have to try to make and to support. And the reports that are coming in from this Oregonian story are pretty amazing. They talk about some of these plantation owners, pot plantations they're putting up, that the Mexican cartels have basically turned to since about 2005. First of all, in 2005, there were regulations that went into effect in Oregon that made production of methamphetamine harder. So some of the old meth cooks, you know, couldn't get enough Smurfs to get the pseudoephedrine, switched over to growing marijuana because they discovered, and check this out, Rand Drug Policy Research Center in 2010 said that it costs $30 to produce a pound of marijuana out on a pub in the public lands. $30 to produce a pound. You can sell it on the East Coast for $7,000. So a lot of these people turn to growing illegal pot gardens out in the wildlife. And the problem with that, of course, is the damage that these illegal plantations do to our land. Because they're not really concerned about, you know, long term here. They're concerned about keeping it hidden and getting it done and making as much money as they can. They'll go out and terrace areas of the forest, you know, destroying all sorts of natural flora there that are not meant to be disturbed. They'll use all sorts of poisons and traps for the wildlife. They'll use pesticides and herbicides and fungicides. They don't care. They do everything they can to maximize this. And when we fight against them, we don't get to catch the big fish. We catch the Mexican immigrant that they put on that land, paid him, you know, $1,600 to camp in a treehouse, live off a Coleman stove. That guy's got nobody to give up, because anybody that ever led him there has a nickname, has some sort of alias, and And then when they go to court, they're poor. They don't, we end up having to foot the bill for the defense attorney, for the trial, for all the stuff that goes on. And they won't, we can't play the snitch game. They won't rat out. They know what these cartels are capable of. Some of this comes up in the story. Let me get to some of these details. In 2006, a federal biologist surveying spotted owls found 30,000 pot plants as he's out there traipsing through the wilderness. In 2011, bear hunters stumbled across a Wallowa County plantation with 91,000 pot plants, the most ever found in Oregon, with a network of plastic pipes that were draining water from the nearby creek, which is a feeder creek for a trout, for trout and steelhead, basically. So messing up their whole, you know, repopulation and spawning and all that. Police found 500 pounds of fertilizer about 50 feet from the creek. Lovely. That's coming down to our drinking water, folks. And rodent killing chemicals at two base camps, you know, typical arsenic, you know, rat poison. An officer who spent 3 days at the site saw no wildlife other than one deer. Assistant U.S. Attorney Jennifer Martin recounted in a court memo, he neither heard nor saw birds, small mammals, or any other wildlife in this formerly pristine area of wilderness. And also what comes with these cartel grows is violence. In 2010, in Jackson County, Southern Oregon, sheriff's deputies shot and killed a 20-year-old plantation worker when he pointed a loaded shotgun at him. So, you know, he had it coming. At least they say he pointed a loaded shotgun at him. The prosecutors still won't name who the deputies are, though, for fears that the cartels will come after them in retribution. In Eastern Oregon, in 2009, police found two men tending more than 1,900 plants on a public land near Vail, Oregon. The workers were armed with a loaded shotgun and a loaded semi-automatic handgun, lived in tree houses, and used a car battery to charge their cell phones. But the other problem that comes along with this is last year, police found only 4 Oregon grows linked to drug trafficking organizations. Not because there's not more out there, but investigators said a big drop in federal spending for the Oregon National Guard helicopter flights is the main reason. The U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall, Oregon's top federal prosecutor, thinks medical marijuana is cutting into the market or traffickers have moved into Idaho. Others think the cartels are just moving around the state. And as far as these cartels and what they're capable of, there's another story from the Oregonian, the police on the defensive, that talk about how And this is right from the piece. Federal agencies devote about $10 billion a year and thousands of officers to drug investigations, yet officials at all levels acknowledge they'll never stamp out the problem, only hold it in check. Hold it in check? You got 91,000 plants out there, growing from 30,000 just 6 years before. We used to count pot grows in the thousands. 4 digits. Now we're counting them in the thousands. 5 digits. It won't be long till we're counting them in the thousands. 6 digits. You're not at all holding it in check. This story goes on to talk about Carlos Barragan. He spent 9 years investigating this guy and found out that this guy had better detective work, better surveillance, better intelligence gathering than the cops did. The cops tried to, in one situation, let me see if I can find this one. Pendleton Police Sergeant Rick Jackson had stopped Barragan for a traffic violation as a pretense to search for drugs. Jackson walked up to the car window to introduce himself. That's when the drug dealer, Barragan, said, "Oh, hello, Sergeant Jackson," and began to describe the location of his home. The guy already knew who the cops were, had it all scoped out already. "That sent a chill down my spine," the sergeant said. One time they tried to get a low-level dealer to wear a wire. As soon as he wore the wire, he went into the place, showed the guy that he's wearing a wire, turned it off, and they slipped out the back. What else? Oh, a heroin dealer refusing to state who his boss was because of the consequence could be his family getting their head cut off like animals. So he went and did his 5 years instead. He was a dishwasher. Dishwasher went to prison for 5 years. The DEA spends $2.8 billion a year to work on this in the U.S. and 67 other countries. No one tracks how much the whole state of Oregon is spending, but the Oregon State Police are spending $5 million a year. And there's task forces in Oregon that are sharing $1.3 million in federal grants to go after these traffickers. But increasingly, these traffickers, are, again, they're operating out in the hinterlands. And this isn't the Portland Police Bureau that gets to deal with it with their multi-million dollar crime lab. It's freaking Canby. It's, you know, Malala. It's way the hell out there in Burns. And these rural police departments are overwhelmed trying to deal with the sophistication these guys have. These traffickers have enough money to have their own, you know, infrared scopes, to hire people to trail the cops themselves, find out where they live, find out what all of their unmarked vehicles look like. Took 9 years to take this one guy down. Wiretapping. You want to wiretap these guys, costs $20,000 a month. You want to get a wiretap, takes about 100 pages of evidence. And then, even if you do get the wiretap, they got so much intelligence going on that they've got somebody informing them that they're being wiretapped, and they just switch phones. And then they got to start the process all over again. And no matter what they do, they take one guy down, and immediately somebody else pops up and supplies the market. They talk about meth in Northeast Oregon for a while because they took down this guy, right? They took Berrigan down. They finally got him arrested. Meth was tight for a short time. But within weeks, police said new dealers stepped in. And this is Darren Tweet, the chief counsel for the state's criminal justice division, says, quote, "They're like weeds. Work by police merely disrupts the supply. That's the best we can hope for in law enforcement." Yes, completely agreed. That's the best you can hope for, because you cannot eliminate the law of supply and demand. People want marijuana. They like it. They want to smoke it. Someone will step in to supply that demand. Now, we can talk about the medical issue as a separate issue, and getting the dispensaries and the growers regulated is a beautiful thing. But keep in mind, that's 1 out of 10 smokers in Oregon. 1 out of 10 people that uses marijuana in Oregon has a medical marijuana card as a patient. The rest of them do not. And this market will continue, especially as legalization begins to unfold in Washington state. You cannot stop this through law enforcement. You can only hope to have better control of it through regulation. All we have done through prohibition is manage to abdicate the control of these markets, of this growing, to people who don't follow rules, who don't follow regulations. And the only way to take the criminals out is through the free market mechanisms, is through making it unprofitable for them to be able to compete with regulated growers. And yet, when we talk medical marijuana, they're always going about it backwards. They're talking about in these dispensary states how they have to make sure that the price is high enough so that it won't get diverted. High enough so that people won't come in and buy their medical and then go out and sell it to the recreational market. That's exactly the opposite way of dealing with this. We should be working to make marijuana safe, accessible, and so reasonably priced that the only decent option is to grow your own or get it at one of the regulated markets. That's the only way this ever begins to make any sense. Well, that's about all the time we got here for today, but thanks for joining us. It's great to be back after our vacation. Coming on tomorrow's show, we've got Odella, the clothing and apparel manufacturers. We'll be talking to them on the show. Also, we will be going out to see Doug Fine, the author of Too High to Fail, at Powell's Books tomorrow evening. Going to try to get him on the phone tomorrow afternoon, if possible. Still got my feelers out on that one. We'll see how that turns out. All sorts of stuff coming out in the rest of the week as well. And keep your fingers crossed, I might, maybe be flying to Denver this weekend for the 710 Cup to bring you video and reports from the first all oil concentrates cup in America. We'll see. Still trying to get that sponsor. We'll see. And possibly next week, shows from Boise, Idaho. Might visit with Lindsay Reinhart, talk to her about The View and other topics.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Hey, stick around. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio comes up next, where you are the voice of the marijuana nation. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down.